And counsel, you have 15 minutes.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you wish to reserve any for rebuttal?
Yes, ma'am. May I have 3 minutes for rebuttal, please?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And you can start whenever you're ready.
Yes, ma'am. May it please the court, Attorney Michael Messman on behalf of Gregory Leonard, the appellant. Good morning. Your Honors, the reason that we are here is because this is a case that's a little bit unusual. And it's unusual in the sense that the trial court, and I was not there for the trial, so I want to make that perfectly clear. I don't have the benefit of what occurred. All I have is the transcript that has been presented and the appendix that's been presented to the court.
Welcome to our world.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, what I read from the transcript is that Mr. Leonard was brought to court based upon 18.2-266, which is a violation of the driving while intoxicated statute. This was a third offense, which of course would make it a felony. The situation that we have presented to the court is the fact that three different scenarios. Scenario number one is that this cannot be a DUI third in the sense that Mr. Leonard has never been found guilty.
Let me ask for this simple-minded person here. The statute says what?
Your Honor, the statute says and let me be very clear. I want to pull the actual statute itself. It says, and this is under 18.2-266, but when we get to the enhancement penalty, that is under 18.2-270, Your Honor. And the enhancement penalty is very specific, and it says, and it's under 18.2-270C1. Any person convicted of three offenses of 18.2-266 committed within a 10-year period shall, upon conviction of the third offense, be guilty.
And yes. Stop right there.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, I know.
18.2266 doesn't mention first offense, doesn't mention second offense, doesn't mention third offense. 18.2666, you have below 0.08 or some other way to conclude it. You violated that statute. If you do it three times, why is that not three convictions for 18.2266?
Well, Your Honor, let's be very clear, and that's a great question. Any person convicted of three offenses, Your Honor, and let me get to the 18.2-270 under the second offense, and that's the whole premise of the argument here. Any person, and I want to read it very clearly, convicted of a second offense committed within the last 5 years after a prior offense under 18.2-266 shall, upon conviction of the second offense, be punished by a mandatory minimum fine of $500 and by confinement in jail for not less than 1 month,
okay,
20
isn't
days.
Isn't that just simply an enhancement of punishment?
Yes, sir, but that's the whole premise. You can't have the enhancement.
So first one, this is the punishment. Second one, the punishment is a little bit greater.
Correct.
And the third one is even greater. So the trial court has before it factually the prior conviction one, prior conviction two, prior conviction three.
Well, Your Honor, here's where we would have a little bit of a statement on that. Any person, and this is where it comes down to the plain language of the statute. And that's
counsel,
where
I guess our point is which statute?
I agree.
It should
both.
Be the third, right. It should be the language relating to the third offense.
Yes, Your Honor, but you can't get to a third offense because the reason you cannot in this situation is he was never found guilty of a second offense.
Well, except if we accept, and setting aside the collateral estoppel
yes.
argument, which we'll get to in a minute.
Yes, sir.
He was found guilty of DUI the first time. That's one, right? He was found guilty of DUI the second time, whether it's first offense or second offense. That's two. He's found guilty of DUI. That's three offenses. Because C1, I assume you'll agree, does not reference anything but 18.2266, and neither 18.2266 or 270C1 reference 270B at all.
Your Honor, and that's where this took me such a great deal of time to digest this and really evolve this, because this is why it's
Anytime
such a...
Anytime it takes that long to digest, it's not a plain meaning argument anymore.
Well,
I'll
Your Honor,
that.
The reason that it's not, but we have to go back to the statute. We have to stand on what the statute says. Any person convicted of a second offense...
The counsel, here's the problem.
Yes, ma'am.
Here's the problem. We're supposed to read statutes so as not to create absurd results.
Yes.
Now, you would agree that in basic math, 1, 1, 1, 1 equals how many?
Yes, ma'am. 3.
3, right? And the statute that talks about what happens on a third offense says what you just read to Judge Felton. So why, when you have 3 offenses, can't somebody be given an enhanced penalty for 3 offenses? It doesn't matter. Don't bring us back to the reading of the second offense.
The reason it doesn't in this case, is because, and that's where we come to that first offense and we come to the collateral estoppel. In 2010,
that's a different argument, but I think you probably should spend more time on that one.
Thank you. Well, when Mr. Leonard, according to, again, this was all based upon the appendix that was presented, when Mr. Leonard was found guilty in 2010, apparently, from the reading of the appendix, his constitutional rights were not protected. Now, Boykins v. Alabama, James v. Commonwealth, this has become a very real issue. And so,
if I understand the collateral estoppel argument, given our decision investor saying that you can't, if you were represented by counsel, you can't collaterally attack the prior DUI judgment, which came after James, and I don't think James says what trial counsel said it said it at trial in this case, but that's a different point and not your burden to bear.
Thank you.
But if I understand your position, it's the Commonwealth shouldn't be allowed to impermissibly collaterally attack the decision of the General District Court in the middle, the second DUI conviction case, which was where we impermissibly collaterally attacked DUI conviction number 1, and it doesn't matter that the General District Court got it wrong, and it was an impermissible collateral attack. I've got a judgment from the General District Court, and the Commonwealth stuck with it.
Your Honor, in all due respect, in all due respect to the Commonwealth, but yes, sometimes that's just the way it happens because when, as defense...
Because your client was successful in getting a court to do something that was impermissible for it to do, that the Commonwealth can't ask a court to undo that.
Your Honor,
at this stage.
And again, with all due respect, the answer is I would submit to the court no. And the reason it's no is because of the fact that not only, and this is why I keep going back to the constitutional right of that 2010 prosecution, the 2010 voluntary versus, yes, sir.
You agree that Vester would prohibit the argument that was made?
I would like to, yes, I would agree, but I would throw in some caveats to that situation is that as a defense attorney, as a trial attorney, when you're standing there and the evidence presented and the judge makes a ruling, defense attorneys get stuck all the time with having to live with the ruling as it stands because maybe you didn't make the objection or you didn't do this.
But you get to appeal it.
Yes, and thankfully so. However, that doesn't mean that it changes the outcome necessarily. It does give us that right. And in this situation, we're all sitting here together trying to muddle through this thing. But the situation has arisen that General District Court judge, and based upon the information that was presented to her, you know, said, hey, this can't apply. It can't be a second offense, which brings us back to that.
Well, 2 questions along that line. First, in ACAC versus Commonwealth, we said, however, collateral estoppel does not apply where the party against whom preclusion is sought could not, as a matter of law, have obtained review of the judgment in the initial action.
Your Honor, the Commonwealth has every right to appeal decisions as well from the General District Court.
Except our decision in Turner says they can't appeal this one.
And, Your Honor, I
assume you like Turner generally.
When it applies to me, I love it. When I don't, you know. So, Your Honor, what I would submit to the court is that, yes, collateral estoppel does apply in the sense that there was an appeal that was made to the circuit court. So we have the general court's ruling, but also an appeal, and the Commonwealth was involved with that appeal. They're the ones who prosecuted that case. And, Your Honor, excuse me, based upon that prosecution, it was a DUI first. It was a DUI first offense.
But because once your client appealed it, they couldn't reinstate DUI second under our decision in Turner. They're not allowed to do that.
Well,
so they could not appeal the General District Court ruling. You agree with that?
I would agree with that statement, yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Then the other question becomes, what actually happened in the General District Court? Was actual evidence put on that he was denied his rights, or was it simply that there wasn't a checkbox that the plea was voluntarily entered, wasn't checked? Because, of course, that leads to different results.
It does, and, Your Honor, I am remiss to have to make this statement, is none of us will ever really know. We were not there.
And that's a problem, isn't it?
It is. And, Your Honor, that's what happens when it's a court not of record.
Well,
we do the best we can.
But hold on. When there is a problem and there's a fact that the record doesn't reveal that's critical to an appellate decision, who generally bears the burden of the silent record, the appellant or the appellee?
Well, Your Honor, in my statement would be, in the General District Court, it's not on the same level because it's a trial.
Doesn't matter. The appellate record, whose responsibility is it to have a adequate appellate record?
It would be the appellant if there was a record to be had.
Well, but in Lee versus the Commonwealth, the Supreme Court of Virginia made very, very clear it may be a bad practice that there's not a that the General District Court reasoning what they actually did is in the record, and it may be unfortunate, but they made very, very clear that when that's the case, the appellant is the one who loses.
I would agree with that. However, we do have some indication of what occurred based upon what Mr. Hooker, the trial attorney, was presenting to the court. And his statements presented to the court was he was there in General District Court, and he was the defense counsel for Mr. Leonard at that time. And his statements, and it's in the transcript in the appendix, and that's where we gleaned this little nugget from, was the fact that based upon what the trial attorney was saying is that this is what occurred. There's no facts to refute that or dispute that.
Well, they don't need facts to refute or dispute it. Now, the question becomes, it seems to me, is what exactly did the, up until page 119, there's no question you lose. However, at page 119, that the Commonwealth's attorney says something, and it's not entirely clear because trial counsels are cutting each other off. There's a stipulation of some kind at page 119. What is your position as to what the Commonwealth stipulated to? Because it's not clear to me whether they stipulated that she found he wasn't, he did not have a guilty plea colloquy that satisfied constitutional requirements, or that she found that the document that was presented, the conviction order, did not provide sufficient evidence in the General District Court. So I'm trying to figure out what the stipulation on page 119 means, and I'm glad to see Ms. Campbell is pulling that page up because she's getting the same question.
Your Honor, my argument to the court would be is that based upon the fact that the Commonwealth attorney was not present, Mr. Lorello was not present, I don't think there's any evidence before the court. I will make it evidence now as part of the stipulation that Judge Hudson's reduced that because she did not find the first prior to be. And, Your Honor, I'm going to stick. I would submit to the court she would not find that it was based upon Mr. Leonard being given his constitutional rights. The General District Court.
But he didn't quite say that.
It did not. No. I mean, I can only stand before you and say this is where we're all together in this situation trying to articulate the best that we...
Would it be equally reasonable for us to complete that sentence would be because she did not find that the first prior to be... checked the box as opposed to some taking of evidence in the what we've all agreed would have been an impermissible collateral attack anyway.
Your Honor, if I may be given just a brief latitude here, I practice in the Virginia Beach General District Court quite frequently, and I have been in front of this very particular judge who is very, very smart and highly astute in these type of areas of law, and I can't imagine for one moment that Ms. Judge Hutchins would make a finding of this magnitude. I mean, and this is a tremendous amount of magnitude without the articulation that this had to have been a violation of the constitutional rights. And that's the only thing I can, other than what...
Counsel, your articulation wouldn't matter.
Counsel. I agree. I mean, yes,
you're into your rebuttal time.
Yes,
if you want any rebuttal time, you probably need to conclude right now.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll give you a little extra time on
rebuttal.
Thank
you so much.
Good morning again, Your Honors.
Good morning. You have 15 minutes, Ms. Campbell.
This case is a fairly simple DUI third conviction with that's gotten a few twists to it.
I would say the twists are not simple.
But ultimately, the collateral estoppel issue and the sufficiency, they're just two issues, a collateral estoppel issue and a sufficiency issue. The collateral estoppel issue...
We recommend you focus on the collateral estoppel.
Absolutely, Your Honor. The collateral estoppel issue is... As the trial court correctly found, the defendant failed to meet the burden. The defendant has the burden of showing that all the elements of collateral estoppel had been met.
Well, it seems to me we've got all the elements with the perhaps not knowing exactly what the district court did. And so, page 119 of the joint appendix, what does that mean? What did the Commonwealth stipulate to? Because up until the point he says, I don't think there's any evidence before the court, I think he's right. I don't think there's any evidence before the court. But then that next statement, I will make it evidence, if he's not referencing what Mr. Hooker has represented to the court happened in the general district court, what in the world is he referencing?
I think he's referencing that he only says, my understanding of this paragraph, he only agrees that Judge Hudson did reduce the second to a first. I do think that he was perhaps about to say something and then quickly regretted that he didn't really know because he wasn't there and maybe he shouldn't be putting on the record what he didn't really know. But
and the next statement he says, I was, and this is where counsel are cutting each mm-hmm. other off, which is why stipulations are much better in writing.
Yes.
He says, I was given the details. That seems to be a reference to what Mr. Hooker, the details that Mr. Hooker gave previously. And if we read it that way, are the elements of assume for a moment we read it that way, are the elements of collateral estoppel met with the possible exception of the appeal being the appeal rendering the judgment a nullity, which I assume you'll get to in a moment.
Yes, Your Honor. I would say the two elements that the trial court correctly found were not met were the litigation of the issue and the finality of the judgment. I do not believe that the defendant has met the burden of showing that there was a verdict in the prior action that was the precise issue that they're now discussing. I think that this stipulation perhaps gets...
If we assume the stipulation gets there, you'll concede that then that element is met.
If we were to assume that this stipulation says that there was evidence taken and that at the end of the day, the judge found that and...
Well, even if evidence weren't taken, but she gives the speech that is attributed to her, that I find, based on the evidence before me, it wasn't a knowing and voluntarily freely entered guilty plea, and therefore the conviction is invalid. If that's what the stipulation is, they meet that element of collateral estoppel.
They meet that element of collateral.
And it doesn't matter that it's wrong or that she couldn't have reached it. Or that it was error for her to reach it, it's still binding for collateral estoppel purposes.
I do not believe that it would still be binding for collateral estoppel purposes because it's not the final issue of the case. It was just really an evidentiary ruling about whether or not this other conviction was going to come in. And therefore, it's not...
That's pretty significant, isn't it?
It is significant to that case, but it...
Well, I mean, don't confuse collateral estoppel and res judicata. It's not the judgment. If the fact is found, it doesn't matter that the judgment could have been... was reached a different... It's not the final judgment. Collateral estoppel says once the facts are found, the facts are the facts. Now, I know the irony that, of course, in 2010, he was found to have committed DUI. And that was what was attacked in 2012. But if the fact was found, how do you get around that? No matter how erroneously it was found.
If the fact it was found and that conviction was not a valid conviction, I think that puts the Commonwealth in a much difficult position. But luckily... the defendant appealed, and the Commonwealth's position is that whatever happened, which we don't know what happened because there is no record of what the district court said, and this court has many times applied that courts speak through their orders, and there's also nothing on that conviction order that suggests why she...
And I pushed her on Lee versus the Commonwealth, so the other thing that Lee said is, but although we can't tell from the warrant, the Commonwealth stipulated to what happened in the General District Court, and therefore, in this case, miracle of miracles, we know. And so doesn't that entire argument on whether we know or not depend on how we read the stipulation?
Depending on how you read this proposed stipulation, yes. Here, but as I was turning to, the defendant ended up appealing that conviction from the General District Court to the Circuit Court. And this court has many times said that that de novo appeal to the Circuit Court completely annuls the judgment.
And in 99.99% of the cases, it's clear that's true. But in DUI recidivism cases, I mean, didn't we say in Turner that if the General District Court reduces the charge from DUI second to DUI first, that is a final judgment entitled to preclusive effect going up? Because even if there's appeal, no matter who appeals it, the reduction in charge, the Commonwealth can't reinstate the higher charge. That's what Chief Judge Felton's opinion in Turner says. And so it can't be a complete nullity. I mean, I know there's plenty of cases that say that, but it can't be a complete nullity because the Commonwealth can't reinstate the higher charge.
Correct, Your Honor. I think that's just a different issue looking at the case of whether or not when the Commonwealth has, for some reason, failed to meet the burden to enhance the punishment that this court has found that they cannot then.
And isn't that exactly our situation here?
No, Your Honor. I mean, the Commonwealth didn't do that in this case because it couldn't. But
well, I mean, the trial court found that the Commonwealth didn't meet its burden one way or the other. The General District Court did in going to DUI second, so convicted him of DUI first. If that proceeding is truly a nullity, then DUI second can be charged in the circuit court. But it's not a complete nullity, is it?
No, Your Honor. I would agree for the specific purpose of the enhancement, it is not a complete nullity. But for the ruling of whatever ruling the General District Court made in regards to other issues, those are a nullity based on this court's case law. That the proceedings... there is nothing to suggest anything else that happened would not be a nullity based on this court's case law, other than that enhancement portion, which is not the issue that is now being raised for the collateral estoppel. It's specifically the General District Court's other ruling, which obviously is related, but is a different ruling, which this court has not found would be a new ruling for this court to find that is something that continues on.
How is it different from Turner?
This case is similar to Turner, but the specific piece that the specific ruling, not that the Commonwealth failed to prove it, but that this conviction is not a proper conviction, is different.
Okay. All right.
So for that purpose, this court has not recognized that would be still a final judgment that the Commonwealth could not, that the Commonwealth is bound by because it no longer exists.
Do you agree that the mere fact that the General District Court erred and committed error in allowing the collateral attack, that does not affect the appellant's ability to use the ruling for collateral estoppel purpose? I know you have other arguments with it, but the fact that it's wrong and shouldn't have been done in the first place doesn't matter.
I mean, I would like to stand up here and say that, yes, it was wrong and it shouldn't have happened so the Commonwealth can attack it, but I cannot point you to something that would allow me to assert that with any authority. So as I've repeatedly stated, the Commonwealth's position is that the trial court was correct because the record doesn't show that, barring assuming a lot about a very specific portion of the record, and the defendant has the burden of showing that there was definitely litigation on the issue and that was a final judgment for that issue, which he then appealed to the circuit court. Second, turning briefly to the next assignment of error, I think it's pretty clear, again, statutory construction, that the defendant can be convicted of a third offense when he has two other DUI offenses of 18.262. And finally, turning to the sufficiency of the record of him actually being drunk, I think the record is...
I think where the inferences lie, the Commonwealth is in pretty good shape on that one.
Thank you, Your Honor. If the Commonwealth has any more questions about the first issue, I would be happy to address them. But the Commonwealth would just assert that the trial court was correct in admitting both documents. They were the 2010 and the 2012, and the defendant was clearly guilty of the third offense, DUI. And we ask that you affirm.
Counsel, we're going to give you 2 minutes. Come on up.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, it was very interesting as we were all discussing, and Ms. Campbell was presenting the information as well, and I know that you all have read this. However, I would like to turn back to page 44 of the record itself, the appendix, and it does specifically speak where Mr. Hooker, again, the trial attorney who was there for the DUI in the General District Court first offense, now the circuit court with Mr. Leonard again, and it specifically states, Mr. Hooker, Mr. Leonard, the decision, and it is the Commonwealth v. Felton, and I'm paraphrasing here, it specifically says that once a court case has been appealed de novo, it's treated as if the case has been pulled. Case dealt with a similar situation. Now, Mr. Hooker specifically states, I was there, that this is what happened. That
Is his statement absent of stipulation evidence of any kind?
No, sir, it's not. And I would, I mean, exactly, it's not. We say that all the time, right? This is, you know, attorneys, this is not evidence that's being presented to you, jury. However, when we have this situation, and then we go a little
what
bit
about
further.
A unilateral, uncontested representation by counsel?
Pardon me, Your Honor, I didn't hear.
What about the law that talks about when an attorney makes a representation and it's not disputed by the opposing counsel?
That's exactly where I was headed, Your Honor. We have the situation where Mr. Hooker goes a little bit further and states, Mr. Lorello and I discussed this in the hallway this morning. I'm surprised that he's presenting as if he's never heard of this.
But there's and actually at that time, the Commonwealth does object, says, I don't know what happened. And in fact, that's what led to the comment. But the unobjected to avowal of counsel, that's in the proffer context. That doesn't turn it into evidence, does it?
No, sir. What does is when Mr. Lorello says, I'll stipulate, on the page 119.
It's what 119 means. That's what controls everything.
Yes, sir. I would submit that to the court. Yes, sir.
And I'll let you sum up, but I do have one question
yes,
that I
sir.
Want to fail to ask. When the motion was filed... In the circuit court,
yes, sir.
On the DUI third, it notes because of the collateral stop argument, you can only find him guilty of DUI second. You can't find him DUI third. Assuming we rule against you on the sufficiency argument, is the relief you are seeking, and is the relief that you were consenting to in seeking remand for sentencing on DUI second if we reject your sufficiency argument?
Yes, sir.
And the appellant consents?
Yes, sir. Yes, based exactly on everything that you just said, yes, sir. Yes.
Okay. And I forgot to ask Ms. Campbell when she was up. I'll let you continue to talk. Ms. Campbell, I assume the Commonwealth in that circumstance would also consent to sentencing on DUI second?
Yes.
Your Honor,
I took more of your time.
No, sir. Just in conclusion, as we've presented here today, this would be the situation that we believe that based upon what occurred in the trial and the appendix itself, that DUI second is a DUI first, that if the sufficiency argument does not lead to a different result and it is a conviction, it would be a conviction of a DUI second and not the third offense. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.